Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
Well, happy Thursday morning to you. It's 9:08 on KDXU, and Nanette Billings is with me. She is the mayor of Hurricane City, the ever-burgeoning, ever-growing, ever-expanding Hurricane City. Mayor, thank you for coming today.
Thanks for having me today.
Good to see you. It's actually been, I don't know, 3 or 4 months, right? Because you've had some other people come in and fill in for you while you were gone. So I'm glad you're here.
Well, it's not that they're just filling in for me because I'm gone. It's on Thursday mornings I have a temple assignment.
Oh.
And so I have to get someone else to work for me if I'm not in there. And so I actually had someone come in at the last part of the shift so I could come today.
That's nice. Well, so, I appreciate you
being here. Yeah, and I'm happy to be here.
So you have the glow of having been in the temple here in the studio.
Well,
huh?
Well, I don't know about that, but I love it there.
Well, you look very nice.
Thank you.
As always, though. I imagine you dressed down for your bear hunt and stuff like that.
I did dress down for that.
Camo. I'm used to seeing you. Yeah? And everybody's like, what are you talking about? She actually went bear hunting. Now, I have never killed a bear, and I guess you hadn't up until a few weeks ago.
Huh? I had not killed a bear. I actually had never seen a bear in the wild. And I've been in the mountains probably more than most because I've killed an elk and several deer and antelope and coyotes and a couple of things. But honestly, I've never seen a bear in the wild in Utah. So
wow.
I drew out. I had 12 bonus points. I drew out, and we ate it. It was delicious.
Nice.
It has a lot more fat, so a little bit more like mutton is the flavor, but it's good.
I was going to say, I've never killed a bear. I've never eaten bear either. I should have, I have a smoker. Well, you were talking about the gristle.
I do have a smoker.
Excuse me, clearing my throat. But if you smoke meat long enough, like brisket, for instance, the fat, the gristle in it will render. Basically, it will melt into the meat and make the meat more moist. So I'm thinking, man, you should have gotten me some of that grizzly, or some of that bear, rather, and the gristly, not grizzly bear, the grizzly bear meat, and I could have rendered it down.
Yeah.
That would have been cool.
Yeah. We actually didn't smoke it. I'll smoke the next.
Yeah. Smoke it along. Give it an overnight smoke at a low temp and, you know, 215 degrees or something, and let that, some of that fat render.
Yeah.
As they say in the smoking business, render.
That's right.
Now, folks, there's going to be a certain amount of people, even people that live in Hurricane, are going, how can you kill a bear? Come on. I mean, this is the poor little helpless animal. I'm not one. I do have a tender heart. I don't like to kill animals, but I'm not against hunting. And there's a reason that they have the hunt, besides it being a cool sport. In Utah, they cull herds down. They cull bears or deer or elk or whatever it is. There's a reason that they need to have them.
Oh, yeah. Well, Division of Wildlife, they absolutely have to control because you can have all your predators take over everything.
And yeah, for sure.
There's reason there's men on the world, you know, in the world. It's not just animals out here. We're trying to do the best we can. And some people don't like to eat meat, and that's fine. We do.
I was going to ask you about your experience on a couple of things. First of all, the hunt side of things. How was that experience? How many of you were out there doing that? And it was your license, right? You were the one?
My license.
Okay.
So there were four of us. We had two friends, and they had dogs, and then Willie and I. That was all that was there that time. But the dogs are amazing. Just so you are aware how these dogs are really, they're trained. And for bear, they put them in the top of the, like on in the truck, in the back, on the top of something so they can smell because the bear scent goes up. Like cougars when you hunt, they're right down in the tracks on the ground and right in the snow or right in the track on the road. But not for bear. Bear, it's up in the air and they smell. And they smell from a ways away. So this bear, I don't know if it crossed the road or not, but this bear was about 860 yards away. When they let the dogs out, they just tracked because they have the mercury collars, and they tracked it all the way to the bear and said, oh, it's treed, and it's 860 yards. And then we just walked up to where the bear was treed with all the dogs.
Wow. Now, what kind of rifle do you use? What kind of weapon do you have to hunt bear?
You know,
is it bigger than usual?
I took a 6.5 Creedmoor, so I don't know if that's the right gun. I have a 270, and it's a featherweight, and I like that if I'm going to shoot elk or deer. But I've used a 300 to shoot my elk, so I don't know. just 300 wind mag, but whatever you like, I guess.
I had a friend, this is kind of one of my only hunting stories because I don't hunt much. I've been once or twice, but I don't hunt much. But a friend of mine was out hunting coyotes. And with coyotes, you use this, I guess, whistle and to mimic the sound of a wounded rabbit.
Yeah.
And then they actually come to you. And so he's out there using the call and killing coyotes, which are kind of a nuisance breed, by the way. Farmers especially are really glad to get rid of coyotes. But it attracted a mountain lion.
Yep.
And so he's sitting there in this little clearing, you know, with the whistle, and instead of a coyote, a mountain lion comes crashing through the trees at full speed, and he pulls his rifle up, takes aim, and pulls the trigger, nothing. Like, okay, so he rechambers it and tries again, click, nothing. So And at this point, if you can imagine, clearing's not that big, and this mountain lion's coming at you at full speed, and they run pretty fast. And he happened to be wearing a sidearm, and so he threw the rifle down, pulled his sidearm, and was able to take the cougar, the mountain lion, down with a sidearm. But he said it was one of the scariest moments of his life.
Yeah.
So if you can imagine, and
well, if you stop calling, and if the cougar actually saw him, he would probably. The cougars usually run away because of humans, but the sound of a rabbit wounded is, it sounds like almost like a baby, that. And so if the cougar probably just didn't notice him.
Yeah, that is one of the more haunting sounds I've ever heard in my life. When I was a Boy Scout, like 12 years old, we went out rabbit hunting. And if you wound a rabbit and it doesn't die right away, it makes a sound that is a little bit, you know, it's stuff nightmares are made out of.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're talking with Nanette Billings. We're not going to talk hunting anymore for those of you that maybe aren't into it that much. Were you able to go up to the League of Towns and Cities?
Yes, so it's called Utah League Cities and Towns.
Okay.
And yes, I was up there.
What was the, they have this every year. I know because every year on the Thursday, all the mayors are like, yeah, I'm not going to be there. Who are you going to get? So I have no mayor for that Thursday every year. Tell us about what that was all about. What was the point?
So a lot of training to help newly elected council members or planning commissioners or even staff members.
Oh, and that's the other thing. Sometimes I'll get a council member to fill in. They're all up there, too.
Yeah, so council members, staff members, and the elected officials.
Mm-hmm.
And it's to gather, so they have different speakers. The governor spoke. They will have the league president and also the other community leaders that will talk on legislators on different issues that are affecting the municipalities. Like, for example, when the legislators are talking about land use with your municipal leaders, they'll talk about all. And then they talk about land use, but then they broke out into many sections. And so maybe your city recorders is going to talk about having an open public meeting and everything from the way you post something online to how you handle every situation. It's just really good training, and it teaches you about the state constitution and what you're allowed to do, what the legislators allowed municipalities to do, because it's about cities and towns. And it's about what your rights are. They talked about water, they talked about power, responsibilities that you have within your streets and infrastructure. It's just all training and helps you to make better decisions, hopefully.
You mentioned it was a lot of it was aimed at more newly elected, but you've been around for a few years. Did you find it pretty useful for you too?
Very, very useful. Yeah. And every time I've gone, I've written down and come back with a whole list of things that we need to work on.
Nice. Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess it's good to remind you that you're not perfect and you got things to work on and things to do as well. And is it hard? I mean, you might have the mayor of, say, Provo and the mayor of Ephraim and the mayor of Hurricane, three very different cities in what they offer and how big they are. is it hard sometimes for, because you don't want a cookie cutter approach, right? You're all very different.
Well, and that's one of the really good things about these trainings is when you're in the room, you're going to hear someone else's idea on something. And then, like, for example, they were talking about like short-term rentals, or they were talking about ADUs, accessory dwellings in cities, and giving ideas about each of the cities and what they've done with their ordinances and how they've helped. There was a couple of different cities that have done some infiltration where they've said, hey, if you have an ADU and you want to separate your lots, you have two separate lots, you have to have utilities that are, and then you, if you want to sell it so that it can be more affordable, but that's for the infiltration of your city rather than, say, for example, a subdivision. You couldn't really do that in a subdivision because they've already platted that lot. But in your city where you don't have it in a subdivision, those are some ways that people, instead of a developer with 100 lots, can increase density. You can just say, each of the citizens here, if they would like to, they already have the right to build an accessory dwelling and rent it. But if they wanted to build an accessory dwelling and sell it so someone has a home, and you can consider it maybe like a flag lot, but not necessarily. They maybe could access it another way. Those are just some of the things they talked about and ways to help with affordable housing rather than just a developer doing it, but all the citizens being able to participate and help with some of those things. That was just one suggestion.
Well, that's cool. By the way, for those that are, what's an ADU? Like a mother-in-law apartment, basically.
An upstairs, downstairs, or an outside, you know, or can something connected to your home, or but it's called an accessory dwelling unit. Yeah. That's ADU.
ADU. They don't like mother-in-law apartment, I guess.
I like that.
We all like our mother-in-laws. Come on now.
Sure did.
Actually, mine has passed away.
Mine too, yeah. And she was awesome.
So, yeah, that's, to me, that's a fascinating way to let people know, look, you, I have a son who has some property up north, and he actually has two lots, and the second lot is doesn't have anything on it, but he's looking into ways, this is in Santaquin City, I think, looking in ways to, you know, obviously the number one thing for him is the infrastructure. Yeah. You better make sure you have piping, you better make sure you have electricity, everything to the other lot before you can do anything with it, so...
Well, and then the size, that's the other thing is we've said anything that's 10,000 square feet or bigger, which is a quarter acre. So the smallest you're going to have is like a 4,000 square foot lot, which is a, when you look at an R1A lot, that's, I can get to say it's, you know, that's not a big lot.
Right.
That's not so.
Right.
Anyway.
I was going to ask you a little bit. So I did a story yesterday on our website about the price of renting an apartment in Utah, in the country, and in southern Utah. So the average price of a one-bedroom apartment in St. George area, Washington County, actually it was the county, not just St. George, in the county, was $1,200 for a one-bedroom apartment. It was $1,500 for a two-bedroom. It was $1,800 for a three-bedroom and $2,500 for a four-bedroom apartment. And then I explored, well, how much would a house payment be if you had to borrow, say, I mean, let's face it, you're not going to get a house for less than $400,000. So even if you have a $50,000 down, you're talking about a $350,000 loan. A payment on a $350,000 loan is a lot of money.
$2,500.
Yeah. And so it's actually still going to be way more than rent would be. So do you have any thoughts on what needs to happen on, I mean, that seems like an awful lot of money. One of the points I was making in the article is if you don't have two incomes, you know, if you're a single person or maybe a dad works and mom doesn't, or mom works and dad doesn't, whatever, it's almost impossible to buy a home.
So two things. One, you're right. That's true. And it's capitalism. And the real answer is supply and demand.
Mm-hmm.
And when you increase supply, then demand goes down and people and prices regulate. And that makes a difference in your community. Right now, our supply is limited. So people have charged more. That's just flat out the way it is.
Yeah.
And right now it's kind of scary because we have less young families moving here. I met with the school district yesterday about a property that we have in Hurricane and that they're looking for elementary, intermediate, middle school, high school on two different properties to put a middle school and high school on one and intermediate and elementary on another over by Santal and Dixie Springs area. And as we're visiting and we're talking about the numbers, they're trying to decide what size of school to build there. And should they build a school that will have 500, a 600, 1,000 students for the elementary? I mean, what size? And so they, as they go through, and their numbers come in October with the school district, but when they look at the numbers, they say, how many young families are moving here? What's the growth rate?
Yeah.
And what's kind of sad is these young families aren't coming because they can't afford to live here. And so it really is frightening to say, well, where's your workforce? Because they are your people that are going to be delivering your trash or picking up your trash, or they're going to be hopefully not delivering, picking it up. They're going to be, you know, delivering your groceries or helping with all of those workforce services. Need. And they need to start somewhere and have jobs. And so we have to consider that you can't just have single family, 1 acre lots. You have to be able to say, we're going to make this work everywhere. The challenge, and this is one of the things they really addressed up at the league, is a lot of people, as you come into a council, you'll have many people that are just coming on council, and their biggest thing is, not my backyard. I'm not going to allow these certain things. And you have to remember, these are your children, and it doesn't mean that they're gangsters and they're terrible people that are moving in next to you. Just because they live in a smaller house than you doesn't mean that they're evil people, and we have to recognize that we're trying to help families thrive. And that's the point, is saying it's fair for one, it's fair for all, and we don't pick and choose winners and losers, and we make good policy so that people can thrive and build, and property rights. That's probably a bigger issue, is the Constitution allows people property rights, and you don't get to choose what everyone else gets to do on their property. Now, within zoning, that's what makes the difference, but people can't say, I don't want somebody to have a ruin my view. Then you buy that lot and then you can keep your view. Those are the issues. And so it's really difficult to always be angry with someone else that owns property, because they have the same right you do to develop it and build something. And so those are some really hard.
My kids, one of them has moved back. One of them lives in Cedar.
Sure.
The rest are up in Northern Utah. And the truth of the matter is, price was a factor.
Yeah, sure.
You know, living here was a factor. And, you know, you say, well, yeah, but buying a house here in Salt Lake is pretty comparable price-wise. It is, but renting an apartment is not. You can rent an apartment for quite a bit less in the Salt Lake, Provo, Santaquin area, all the way up, you know, in Ogden, Northern Utah. And so, yeah, eventually my kids did buy houses, but they had to rent first, and they had to, you know, there was a transition involved and everything. And we'd love to have our kids live here. Yes. And I will ask you this. So Park City, my daughter worked in Park City for a while. Park City, the housing prices have gone just bonkers. Mm-hmm. I mean, the average price of a house is over $1 million in Park City.
Yeah.
The people that service Park City, and Park City is very much a resort town. There's a lot of people that work in restaurants and, you know, just the service industry. They don't live in Park City.
Right.
They can't live in Park City. It's too expensive. Are we headed that way, do you think, here in Southern Utah?
I don't. I think that we still have the affordability that's going to maintain because of the supply. I do see in Park City, they've limited that. And that's one of the challenges that they have. And I want to keep the small town charm. But you can keep a small town charm to know your neighbors and be good people. Even if you have some of that, doesn't mean you have to increase density everywhere. It just means you have to allow certain, like, for example, the ADU. You are living on that property. You're going to know who your neighbor is because you're choosing who your neighbor is.
Yeah.
And some of those are just, it helps to with the supply.
Very, very good point. We're talking with Nanette Billings, mayor of Hurricane City. Where are we at time? Oh, we've got about 2 minutes until our next commercial break. Tell me about growth in Hurricane City right now. I mean, obviously, the growth is crazy. It's going. We're at, what, 35,000 now?
No, we're only about 25,000.
I'm sorry. I was thinking Washington City.
Yeah, Washington's
okay,
25. About 35. Okay. Yeah. So our growth rate, the last few years, we've been between, I'm going to say, 4% and 7% each year. This year's a little bit lower than where we've been as far as even building permits, but we have a lot that's come online. We have 19,000 entitled lots. Wow. 19,000. So we're going to see a lot of growth, and it's just there is people are if they want to buy a lot and build, it's they're ready.
If someone comes in, buys a lot and wants to build, maybe gets a building permit, do you explain to them, or is this an issue about water? Do you have to say to them, we can provide the water for you, but only to, you know, I mean, at what point do you say we actually can't guarantee you'll have water?
So Hurricane City does not, we're not the guarantor of the water.
Okay.
And that's, it's kind of a, it, I don't want to call it a oxymoron, I don't know what to say, but other than the fact that the water district is the, they issue the letter. So that if someone comes in and they're going to pay their impact fee, they're delivering, and the access for that retention is through the district. Now, our city does have some water rights, but it really is through the district. And that's the same, that water pooling agreement that we have through the district is for all, not just our city. And unless they're not part of the pooling agreement, and then their city is supplying the water, and they have to have the rights, and they have to have the ability to supply it.
It's a real issue, and we had a caller call last week about quality of life and water restrictions, and he said, look, anytime you tell me I need to cut back on water, that is, even though you may say it's not, that is a factor in my quality of life. And, can I play in the sprinkler in my backyard with my kids? Well, they haven't said, no, you can't do that, but the kind of the message is out there, please don't.
And I haven't heard the please don't. I think that people can, it still refer, it goes into your aquifer, and so it's going to be pulled out. But it's the access to the aquifer that they probably are saying, well, it costs more money to, instead of having it be from the sky, come down the river and go right into your pipes. It's a little different to pull it out of the aquifer through your wells, but we have the access. And like St. George has 22 wells. We've got a few. Washington County, the district has many. But, you know, probably if I know this is a tough subject when people bring God into this, but he created the world. He can certainly sustain the world. And I am not concerned. I know that some people are, but I don't live in fear. I look at this and say, we have to learn to be good stewards and conservation minded. We're not wasteful, but we have good people on access and retention. And those are the two issues, is where are you going to access the water from? How are you going to retain it for, like in our reservoirs, in our tanks? How are we going to access and retain it? And we have good people on it, and we're working on those things. So I have a little bit different view than others. And I just say, I'm living in faith and we're moving forward and not living where we're just going to be wasteful. And we know those numbers. We're good.
Yeah. I think one of the things you're saying is the Lord helps those who help themselves a little bit too, right?
Yeah. And acknowledge his hand. I'm a true believer that he just, every time, okay, this is a really good example. Our springs, like Tocqueville Springs, we've stopped having the water flow that we've needed. We've sent divers down to drill in and do some other work on the springs, and then we've gotten four times the amount of water, and that's happened over and over again. And I just see how when the need arises, he has provided. And there, so I'm
Nanette Billings, mayor of Hurricane. We've got more with Nanette after this quick timeout. We'll check weather.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk leader.
Haven't had her on for a little while. It's good to have Nanette Billings, mayor of Hurricane City, with us today on the show. Nanette, it's a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
You brighten the room for sure. If you want to talk to Nanette, by the way, you can call at 673-5890. That's our studio line, 673-5890. Or if you're a little shy and would rather just text, you can text me at 435-467-5842. I've actually had a few people call my cell phone while I'm on the air, and I'm like, no. You got to text the cell phone or call the studio line, not vice versa.
Okay.
So Anyway, Nanette. Interesting little controversy swirling over here on the west side on Dixie Downs Drive. They have taken Dixie Downs down from two lanes to one lane and then created a very huge bike lane. I don't know. I think it's part of the whole one street concept that Daniel Larkin had proposed a while back. But the official stance right now is they want people to slow down on Dixie Downs Drive, and reducing lanes will slow things down. But has the one street concept hit Hurricane? Has that been proposed? Have you guys talked at all about that kind of thing? By the way, right now, people are not happy about what's happened on Dixie Downs Drive.
Well, in our Dixie Transportation, which is DTEC, we discuss these kind of concepts all the time. And there's a new study that just came out with the Dixie MPO, and it is Safe Streets for All. Mm-hmm. That's what it's called. Yeah. And it's how can we, as community leaders, help to initiate some kind of a, I don't know if you want to say it, ordinance or change in behavior so we have safe streets. And some of it is going to be your messaging, your striping, your signage, some of those things. Sometimes a bulb out or whatever that's going to slow people down. People think, hey, why don't we move these things so we can speed up? Well, the point is you have people crossing or you have reasons that it needs to be slower than faster. And so, and we want to encourage people to be able to use their bicycles if they want and be safe doing it, not have accidents. And so, yeah, that's...
Well, we landed in Amsterdam when I went to Europe, and Amsterdam is a very bicycle-centric city. Yeah. I mean, there are, I think they said something like there's 2 million bikes. There's like two bikes for every one person in that city. And they have changed their laws to the such that bicycles pretty much get the right of way all the time, every time, including over pedestrians and over cars. And so, you know, in a city that's condensed like that, where, I mean, the farthest you need to go is like a 10-minute bike ride, right? That's realistic. To me, turning Southern Utah into a bicycle place, I don't have a problem with people riding bicycles. I just don't see, if I live in Hurricane and work in Santa Clara, if I live in St. George and work in Leverkin or vice versa.
And I've gone to New York and rented their bikes and the subway, and you can jump on a bike, get on a subway, you know, ride it to a subway, get on the subway, go where you want, jump on a bike from right there and ride it to where you need to. You can get all over the city that way fast. We're not that. So this is for people that want to use the bike for exercise or to go to work or school or whatever that they want to use their bike. But we are not going to become that, at least at this point. We're 50 years from that, if ever.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about State Street now in Hurricane. It used to be that was the only way you could get to Hurricane, pretty much. Now, you guys, SR7 has changed things a little bit.
Correct.
There was an accident this morning, I think 7th South State or whatever it was, 700 South State, and it held up traffic for a little while. I don't know if you ran into it or if it was after you were already gone. But
I left at 5:15 this morning.
Oh, yeah. So no, it was after that. Yeah. But it does kind of highlight a little bit the fact that Hurricane, even though you now have a little bit of an alternate route to get there, State Street, you know, SR9 going in is really, really crucial to Hurricane. Is there anything else you can do about it besides encouraging people to take SR7?
So 600 North is another option, and they can also take 100 North or 100 South and from 700 West. A lot of times if people are coming off SR7, they can take 3000 South and come in.
Okay.
And so that actually helps. But we're looking for some other alternative routes and working with more connections, because really this new connection from 600 North to 3000 South, that's along 700 West, that is our first full connection in town from north to south, because we just have had farms in the middle, and development pays for development.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
Normally, you're not going to have a council or your leaders that are going to want to come in and just pay for all of the roads and access to build roads and pay for all of the easements and access to build that road. It costs a lot to buy people's property, and so you just wait until development happens, and then people develop and they build the road. But
the first house we ever bought, my wife and I, was in Hurricane, Utah. I think we paid $74,000 or something for it. Of course, this was in the mid-90s.
Right.
Good luck finding anything for that price now. Maybe a shack on a shack on a clifftop. I don't know. But and we lived in Hurricane for 7 years and enjoyed it. I love Hurricane. I think one of the things we learned is there's a lot of pride in being a Hurricane citizen. Almost, I don't want to say adversary, but almost that, look, we're Hurricane, we're on our own, we're not a suburb of St. George, which a lot of people think Washington City is a suburb of Santa Clara, Ivins. We are Hurricane City. We're out here on an island on our own, and we're proud of that. Is that feeling, am I accurate or am I wrong?
I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say, yeah, and that's where that small town charm comes in. Mm-hmm. People are wanting to, I mean, they associate Hurricane with separation from the St. George area a little bit, but I mean, we're grateful. When I tell people where I live, I'll usually say, hey, we live in Hurricane by St. George, and I associate it.
Yeah.
Or I'll say, we're 20 minutes from Zion National Park by Springdale, and I associate it in the middle between Springdale and St. George.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Do you have to do that as much as you used to? Because I remember, like, when we moved to Washington City, we went from Hurricane to Washington City, and I remember I would tell people, hey, you know, I might meet someone up north or whatever. Hey, we live in Washington. And they're like, oh, is that by Ogden?
Yeah.
No, that's Washington Terrace. We live in Washington City. Well, where is Washington City? It's right next to St. George and Hurricane. You know, yeah. You kind of have to mull to give them a bearing. And there's, like I said, there's not really anything wrong with that, but because it lets people know you are. Has it gotten better? Can you now say I live in Hurricane and people from Northern Utah know exactly where that is?
A lot of people that know right where it is. They'll say, oh, I've been there. Or I've gone to Sound Hollow, or I've come there to bike. Mm-hmm. Or I brought my ATVs down and ridden on Sand Mountain. Yeah, and so a lot more people. And, you know, we don't have traffic like there. It's in St. George. The only place we have traffic is really on State Street.
Yeah.
Everything else, you move one block off of any of the roads off of State Street and you do not have traffic. So
it's I'm sitting there listening to you talk
and
about
Sound
traffic.
Hollow. Sound Hollow Road is rerouted right this minute, right, so it's been insane.
Right behind you are cars, both directions, mm-hmm. seven lanes on Bluff Street, and I'm thinking, that's even State Street, I don't know, ever gets this bad, so in Hurricane. But we're talking with Nanette. Where are we at? All right, we got to get a commercial break here in a minute. I do want to we'll take a break here, but I do want to come back and talk about your Veterans Memorial.
Okay.
And what's happening with that. I love, one of the things I love about Southern Utah is the volunteer spirit. And it's not just the volunteer spirit of, hey, I'm going to go help with the marathon, or hey, I'm going to go help with the triathlon or whatever. It's the volunteer spirit of people willing to donate time and money and their own effort in building something for a good cause. And
I'll tell you all about it.
You've experienced that firsthand with your memorial. We'll talk about that when we get back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
We're live on North Bluff Street here in St. George, Utah. I'm lucky enough to have Mayor Nanette Billings, Hurricane City, with me today on Mayor Thursday. Mayor, thanks for coming.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Appreciate you being here. Now, some people say, well, her husband is the political one and not her. Why is she the mayor? Well, you ran, he didn't, right?
That is true. That's very true.
He did run for something and won, lost a very, very close race.
Yeah. You know what? That's okay. We keep good people, and I'm really pleased. Joey Liston's doing a good job.
He's a good guy.
The house. Yeah. He's doing an excellent job. And we have good people running for our offices. That's awesome. We had two good people running, and that's perfect.
Election-wise, in Hurricane coming up in November, what seats are open?
Nothing in Hurricane.
Nothing? Okay.
Nope.
No city council or anything, huh?
Nope. Right now, this is, and that'll be next year because it's on a two-year cycle so that you'll have, next time we'll have three seats for council and the mayor up, and the next year's
the
two.
The mayor,
And then it's two, so.
When do you kick into campaign mode?
If I do, it would be next June.
Oh. Does that mean you're not going to?
I don't know. I have not decided. I am just working as hard as I can to do all the good that I can while I'm here. So
that's
we'll
what
see.
People want to hear. I'm you're working like, as hard
I don't know.
As you can.
I don't know if I'm going to do it.
The problem with that attitude, if you're working as hard as you can, doing as good a job as you can, you might actually get reelected accidentally. Because they're like, oh, she's working hard. We're going to vote for her, right? I mean, it happens.
I just...
Now, if you were a bum, if you weren't doing anything, they'd be like,
yeah,
if I
wasn't showing up and putting in my 70 hours a week, that'd be a good reason to not vote me in. But I don't know. I haven't decided. I mean, it is a sacrifice not to be the grandma and do the things that I want to do.
Sure.
But I'm seeing the good that's happening in our community. I mean, these are quality projects and important issues that we're working on. And really, the issue with good government is having new vision and fresh vision often, and having good people that don't have an agenda, that just come in and learn, because you don't know all of this when you start. Sure. But you can learn it, and you sit in the meeting and you can resonate with truth, and so you can figure things out. And you know what? There's a lot to be said about fresh vision.
It's true. It's true. So, perspective. New perspective.
New perspective. And I've just learned a lot by being present, showing up. 90% of it is actually going to all these meetings, because when you hear the information, you can make better decisions and you can be informed and you can ask questions and have the citizens' information come to you so you can make good decisions.
Very well said. A mayor is not a part-time job. It's not a full-time job. It's an
all-the-time job. That's true.
All right, tell us about Veterans Memorial. We're down to about 8 minutes.
Okay, super excited to share this part. So Hurricane City's building a Veterans Memorial Park for the east side of the county. So Leeds, Hurricane, Laverkin, Tokerville, Springdale, Rockville, Virgin, Apple Valley, Hildale, all of those cities that we have had kids that went to high school in Hurricane, or people that have moved here since they came back, if they've served, we're putting their name on our Veterans Memorial. Wow. This memorial is being built by our citizens. It's being funded by our citizens. We did just get a grant from T-Mobile. They gave us $50,000, but that's a private business saying, hey, we'll help with that. But most of it's been from the businesses, the business owners, and the citizens in our community that have contributed. The donated labor that's happening right now.
Yeah.
I just got the donation receipt from Dennett Construction, and they came in and they spent 3 weeks with three or four guys, and it was like 844 loader hours and 85 track hoe hours, and they put a 12-inch blocks in and the storm drain and inlet. I mean, it was $85,000 donation.
I don't think people understand how much it costs to get a heavy equipment operator to work.
Yeah.
And they donated that.
Yeah, and I had Scott Stratton come in with his Stratton Construction, and they did two different parts with our sewer. And I mean, spent a couple of days doing this work, and I've had Jason Curtis's group come in and build the block wall for our bathroom. And they spent 3 or 4 days putting that bathroom together. Stan Dutton with GTD Pools came in and put the concrete pad. We actually have four other contractors that are coming in that are doing the other concrete. Interstate Rock has donated 200 yards of concrete, and they're asphalt in our parking lot. That's huge.
Yeah, that's expensive.
It is. I mean, we're so grateful for all of these good donations. We have Jared Higgins and Josh Langston that are going to come in and do our monuments and our flagpoles. We have Mike Lowe, he's going to do all of the curbing around the entire park, which is a lot. Of the circumference of that. The Iversons, Kylan, Brennan, Colton, Robert Iverson are going to come and put the sidewalk around it and build that. We have the monuments that are ordered, but we just got some statues. Well, we're looking at which statues, and the statues we've looked at, there's one that's a fallen soldier, so you see the boots and the rifle and the helmet, and there's another one with a soldier carrying the soldier. Mm. And then we have the eagle. And we've got an eternal flame that we're looking at. So some just really fun things, but all of the branches of the military are being represented. So you've got six branches, and it'll be six different flags along with your state and United States flag. So just some beautiful, beautiful things. It's going to be a great place to gather, to be able to have Veterans Memorial Memorial Day or 4th of July or just to be able to gather and have a flag ceremony or have a service for a service member or just gather so that you can have a remembrance of the different people and names are going on the walls. It's going to be beautiful.
Is there a place online somewhere where we could see an artist rendering or an idea of what it's going to look like?
Yeah, they can go to cityofhurricane.com and they can look on our website. And if they want to still donate, if people pay $500, we're putting their name on a donor wall. And they can bring that right into the city. You can pay more than $500. We'll take their money. We're not... You know, we accept people's offerings here, but even if they wanted to pay $50, we've had people come in and just give a little bit, and we're so grateful. I had a city worker come to me not very long ago and gave me a check for $50, and I went, thank you. It means a lot that you would consider helping with this. And so, yeah, we've raised a considerable amount of money, and the whole park is being funded by all of our citizens gathering together to say thank you to our military
being
amazing, great people that protect and defend us.
That is simply amazing, and it gives you, you know, Nanette, sometimes we get so caught up in this evil world and all these evil forces and bad things, and I've said it before on this show, I went on a cruise out of Galveston, Texas, and all I saw were American families loving and caring for each other. I truly believe, and some people are skeptical about this, I truly believe that the real America that you and I love is still there.
When I'm calling these contractors, like I have four people that are the plumbers, your Mervyn Terry and your Jeff Adams and your Stetson and John Nielsen that have come in and done all the plumbing for nothing, and Abe Hepworth and Lance Hutchings. I mean, they've come and done the electrical, and Larry LeBaron is hanging doors and putting up Delta trussing. They just came into our city, and I called them and said, hey, would you help with the trusses? And they said, sure. Call S&S Steel or Schulzen's Ace Hardware. Every time I just name, they just say yes. And if they've said, you know, not right now, I'm like, but they've helped with something else another time. And I'm just so grateful because we have people that have just said, yes, I'll help with that. And that's it. They have that spirit of, how can I contribute? What can I do? We're going to have our community gather, and we're hoping around December, maybe around Reza Across America, but we're hoping to lay down the ground cover, to put down the rocks, to lay down the sod, to put the bushes and trees in with our community. We're going to have them come in and help do the last parts of this Veterans Memorial. So it's going to be really awesome.
It is. The other day I was talking about, you know, we need to teach our children about this stuff, but the best way to teach our children about this is to do what these guys are doing. Oh, yeah. They're all volunteering. They're, by example, they're saying, yes, I'm willing to give my time because remembering these veterans and what they've done for us is worth it.
Well, what you do speaks louder than saying it.
Oh, that's so true. So true. In life altogether,
that's
really.
That's right.
I think one of the reasons, if you wanted to get reelected, Nanette, I'm not saying, but if you wanted to, I think people see what you do and not necessarily what you say, and what you say is fine, but they see what you do and they go, yeah, that's what we need in Hurricane City. So,
well, I'm gathering people. That's what I'm doing. I'm trying to unite and help people say we can do more. We can do good things. And when you ask people, if you say we're raising taxes, you have to do this, there's a difference between saying, hey, would you help us? Can you contribute? Is this something?
Right.
And it's voluntary. People say, I can help with that, and they want to. And that's exactly, they want to support our military.
That's a great, kind of a great study in human nature. If you tell someone they have to do something, they're going to kick back. They're going to say, but if you ask them, hey, will you do this? And they see a good cause.
Yeah, we've had hundreds of people help with this. This isn't just a one-time effort. This is just, when I first gathered last August, it's only been 1 year we've been working on this.
Yeah.
I gathered last August with 43 community members, and that was amazing to say, what can we do? We started with just a dinner and an auction. We did a rodeo. We did a golf tournament. We've had a square dance. We've had the Rotary helped do the Easter car show. Mass Off-Road Recover held a great big event out and donated a Jeep and the proceeds. I mean, these are the kind of things we're talking about. It's just amazing. We have amazing people like Mass Off-Road Recovery saying, hey, I'll come in. We'll sponsor a hole for the golf tournament. I'll bring some people in that want to golf with them. I mean, those are the kind of people that we have in our community. They're just amazing.
Love it.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff gives you faith in America and that we will survive. So, Nanette, we're out of time. Thanks for coming on today.
Thanks for
having me. Been a pleasure. Real quick, the address of the park and then the hopeful starting opening date?
Okay, so right by 500 North by the, if you're going into Laverkin from Hurricane, 500 North, there's a new light right there. Turn left, and it's right before the cemetery.
Okay.
And opening when we're done. Hopefully. We have volunteers when we're done, and I'm not going to commit, but we're hoping maybe December.
That works. Yeah. Thank you, Nana. Always a pleasure.
Oh, Ted Dutton. He's our general, and he has been fantastic. Free. Here's a person that's doing the park. That's just, I'm so grateful.
Awesome stuff. Yeah. Thank you, Nanette. See you later. Back tomorrow.